Part 1. Chapter 1. The order to abandon ship was given at 5 p.m. For most of the men, however, no order was needed, because by then everybody knew that the ship was done and that it was time to give up trying to save her. There was no show of fear or even apprehension. They had fought unceasingly for 3 days, and they had lost. They accepted their defeat almost apathetically. They were simply too tired to care. Frank Wilde, the second in command, made his way forward along the buckling deck to the crew's quarters. There, two seamen, Walter Howe and William Bakewell, were lying in the lower bunks. Both were very nearly exhausted from almost 3 days at the pumps. Yet they were unable to sleep because of the sounds the ship was making. She was being crushed. Not all at once, but slowly, a little at a time. The pressure of 10 million tons of ice was driving in against her sides. And dying as she was, she cried in agony. Her frames and planking, her immense timbers, many of them almost a foot thick, screamed as the killing pressure mounted. And when her timbers could no longer stand the strain, they broke with a report like artillery fire. Most of the forecastle beams had already gone earlier in the day, and the deck was heaved upward and working slowly up and down as the pressure came and went. Wilde put his head inside the crew's quarters. He spoke quietly.
"She is going, boys. I think it's time to get off."
Howe and Bakewell rose from their bunks, picked up two pillowcases in which they had stowed some personal gear, and followed Wilde back up on deck. Wilde next went down into the ship's tiny engine room. Kerr, the second engineer, was standing at the foot of the ladder, waiting. With him was Rickinson, the chief engineer. They had been below for almost 72 hours, maintaining steam in the boilers to operate the engine room pumps. During that time, though they couldn't actually see the ice in motion, they were altogether aware of what it was doing to the ship. Periodically, her sides, though they were 2 feet thick in most places, bowed inward 6 inches under the pressure. Simultaneously, the steel floor plates jammed together, screeching where their edges met, then buckling up and suddenly overriding one another with a sharp metallic report. Wilde did not pause long.
"Let down your fires," he said. "She's going."
Kerr looked relieved. Wilde turned aft to the propeller shaftway. There, McNeish, the old ship's carpenter, and MacLeod, a seaman, were busy with torn pieces of blankets, caulking a cofferdam built by McNeish the day before. It had been thrown up in an attempt to stem the flow of water coming into the ship, where the rudder and the stern post had been torn out by the ice. But the water now was almost up to the floor plates, and it was gaining faster than the cofferdam could hold it back, and faster than the pumps could carry it away. Whenever the pressure ceased for a moment, there was the sound of the water running forward and filling up the hold. Wilde signaled to the two men to give up. Then he climbed the ladder to the main deck. Clark, Hussey, James, and Wordy had been at the pumps, but they had quit on their own, realizing the futility of what they were doing. Now they sat on cases of stores or on the deck itself and leaned against the bulwarks. Their faces showed the unspeakable toil of the past 3 days at the pumps. Farther forward, the dog team drivers had attached a large piece of canvas to the port rail and made it into a sort of chute down to the ice alongside the ship. They took the 49 huskies from their kennels and slid each one down to the other men waiting below. Ordinarily, any activity of this sort would have driven the dogs mad with excitement, but somehow they seemed to sense that something very extraordinary was going on. Not one fight broke out among them, and not a single dog attempted to break away. It was perhaps the attitude of the men. They worked with a deliberate urgency, hardly speaking to one another. There was no display of alarm, however. In fact, apart from the movement of the ice and the sounds from the ship, the scene was one of relative calm. The temperature was 8.5 degrees below zero, and a light southerly wind was blowing. Overhead, the twilight sky was clear. But somewhere, far away to the south, a gale was blowing toward them. Though it probably wouldn't reach their position for at least 2 days, its approach was suggested